Start up like this, or like this, and hit the start button to flip back and forth. You can make the important things big, keep the small stuff small, and arrange it all around you. You can be all work, all play, or even both at the same time. You can do it all simpler and easier on your Windows tablet, PC, or Surface. That's the new Windows. One experience for everything in your life.
Welcome to Dev Radio. This is David Giard, and my guest today is Greg Levenhagen. How are you, Greg?
Pretty well. Battling a little bit of thunderstorms up here in Wisconsin, but it's better than all the snow we had throughout the winter, so it's welcome.
It could always be worse.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about yourself, Greg. I think people in the Midwest know you really well, but maybe around the country they might not.
So I work for a company called Skyline Technologies as a consultant. Primarily on the Microsoft stack, but we also do some Android and iOS dev. I am a client development MVP, which covers Windows 8, Windows Phone, desktop development for Microsoft Technologies. And been working for about 15 years for experience, so it's about a wrap.
So you've written an app or two, it's fair to say.
Yeah. It's where my passion lies. It's just fun, you know. That kind of late night coding, whether it's for your job or for your own hobbies type stuff, it's just really fun. And the tools that we've had over the last several years have really grown to make that even more enjoyable.
This is the Microsoft stack tools.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. You were telling me about an app that you and your company, I think, built recently.
Yes.
Introduce us. Tell us about that.
Well, so a little bit of history on that. What Skyline does in order to help do training and cross-promotion of technologies is to have dev camps and give camps. And so when Windows 8 was coming out, about a year and a half ago, we had a dev camp.
Can I stop you right there? And can you describe, I think people know what a dev camp is, where you learn to develop. But what's a give camp?
So the give camp we do, we usually do Saturday, Sunday kind of combo where people come in on their own time. And very much like a Habitat for Humanity, where if you're skilled with any kind of physical trades in building a house, you can donate your time. As technology and software professionals, we figured, hey, that's where we can add the most amount of value to somebody who may need stuff. So, for instance, we did one with Riverview Gardens, which helps out with people in need for food. And so instead of making apps for those in need, because they may not be the most likely to have mobile phones, what we did is we made a whole volunteer system for them. So mobile apps, website, backend, where that probably wouldn't have been in the budget for them, for that company, the volunteer organization, to be able to support all that. It was a very rewarding experience from our end, and helping out the community. And as such, we got to, use some of the newer technologies, help people learn new technologies that may not have had exposure to it. So it was a good experience.
This is a phone app, a Windows 8 app, a Windows a web app. What is it?
Yes, all of the above.
Oh, really?
So we make a bunch of different ones, like with the Riverview Gardens. That's an app you can download for Windows 8 right now and check it out. It's also a web app for signing up on those. It only is particular for Northeast Wisconsin area in that case, but we also did one for what we call like museum art, because most museums only have like at most 10% of their inventory on display. And for educational purposes, what about that other 90% if kids want to learn, students want to do research? How do they get that information? So there's actually some protocols in place for keeping that inventory internally within museums, and they get exposed in a variety of ways. And so we've used Azure to do a lot of the crunching and pull all that stuff together and then expose that through web and a variety of mobile apps as well. So, you know, doing those kind of things could, you know, our benefit from Skyline is, again, the cross-training and learning some new technologies, but then we get to, you know, help out the community as well.
Very cool. They start to cut out a couple apps there, but you have one that focuses on beer.
Yep. So
that's the one I want to hear about. I don't, probably can't tell it from looking at me, but I'm a man that enjoys a glass of beer every now and then.
Yeah. So back to the those other two were really our give camp type thing, which we do 1 year, and then we do one dev camp a year. And so when Windows 8 came out, we broke down into 6 different teams and made 6 different apps. So the Beerology one is what we call it. It's out for free in the store, Windows 8 store right now. Excuse me. And that one focuses solely on helping people get more information about their beer. And, you know, we take in that data initially, and there's over 18,000 beers in the catalog. So, you know, integrating in with Windows 8 store apps, getting a touch interface, working with searching through those 18,000 beers, finding, you know, we get a lot of ancillary data as well. So like what type of glass the beer is recommended to be in, what kind of family it's in, you know, if there's suggestions for similar types of beer. You know, if you like a particular beer from one of the brewers, you can find what other types of beer they make. You know, you can catalog them. So like, hey, this is on my suggested list. I want to check this out. We've been talking about enhancing the app to even expand it for bars to somehow get it more integrated with their system, you know, so like you could walk into a bar, potentially do some touch stuff and keep track of what beers you've tried. That's still just kind of in discussion, that last piece, but, you know, we've seen a large amount of downloads on Beerology, and I'm quite happy with it, so.
Very cool. I'm looking at your app right now, as a matter of fact. It's a Windows 8 app, correct?
Correct, yep. We have not updated that release for Windows 8.1. It will still work on Windows 8.1, but we just haven't updated the feature set there. We ran into some interesting challenges with making that, so I mentioned 18,000 beers. And so...
I got really tired and a little bit drunk.
Yeah, no comment, but, you know, we were volunteering our time over the weekend, but there was a team of people, you know, one of my associates led up this particular one. I was helping out with a variety of the projects. Like I had mentioned, we had 6 of them. So one of my colleagues, Jeremiah Billman, was the one that really led up, individual efforts there. And so we were going back and forth on some of the architecture, where, Do we load in the 18,000 records right away? Do we keep them all online? And we actually went back and forth with some of the Microsoft support engineers when they were offering, or they may still be, the free development help. And so we chose to include them all, and then we wanted the app to still be responsive. So we did like a SQLite implementation in the app itself to load them up quickly and index them. And now it
caching of data, you mean?
It'll load them up, and so it uses the local database on that side. And then we use Azure as the back end to just do the kind of the change, right? So the update, create, delete stuff to keep the list of beers up to date.
Using Azure Mobile Services?
No. At the time, this was in the fall of 2012 when we originally made this. And mobile services was still in preview. That came out the last week of August in 2012. I remember because I was giving a presentation on using mobile and Azure at DevLink, and the day before Microsoft released .NET Mobile Services, so I had to rewrite my entire talk that night. But so mobile services is something that we use quite a bit, and I'm a big fan of that, especially now. I mean, Node.js is great, but especially now with the .NET mobile services backend, where you can incorporate things like Web API and the MD framework backend, I think makes it a much more complete type system. But yeah, that's kind of that picture and managing that data so that we can keep the updates and, you know, keep the newer beers as they update. it's a really good architecture for us and allowed us to not have to worry about the infrastructure pieces and scalability and all that as the app has grown.
We've been talking about this app for a while. Can you show it to us?
Yeah.
So this is it then?
Yeah. So what we're looking at here, we've got a little featured list, which changes, you know, kind of on a random type basis. And then we see our main menuing system here in the middle, where we've got origins for beer, category, styles, what brewers they come from, and then near me, if you're allowing for location services within the app. On the beer fridge area here, we've got a personal pub. We've got try things, so like ones that you want to, like kind of a to-do list, party pub, and also a beer me, which will give you some random type of suggestions. And then on the far right, if you scroll a little bit, we have an introduction guide. We have a glossary of beer-related terms, a variety of the different types of glassware, and then even food pairings. So like if we go in glassware, for instance, we can see that we've got things like the flute, the goblet, and as we scroll over, a mug, the pilsner. You know, it gives you a little bit of text about what each is used for. So here, you know, like for a pint, you know, it says a pint glass, despite the name, may hold up to 20 ounces of beer, you know, as it's, you know, since those may not be familiar, pint is actually a unit of measure as well. You know, we got the snifter, strange, this is the strange, or stange, I've never actually drank out of that one, tulip. So there's definitely things in here that, you know, I've never had, but at some point I would like to. And so let's hit back.
I'm getting thirsty just looking at this.
That's good. You know, it's too bad it's midday when we're recording.
I know. I'm actually in a Starbucks right now recording this. Well, I have a beverage, but it's not on this app.
So we get a glossary here, which helps you learn about, you know, a variety of the different things. So help you educate yourself when you're looking through a variety of that beer stuff. Introduction here just gives our contribution to where we actually get the API information from. You know, we're not spending tons of time on the back end keeping up to date on that. Somebody else is actually providing that data, so we thank them.
Okay. Is that something you have to pay a small fee for, or is it...
No, this one is actually freely available, so
I see. You
know, we took that data and tried to make something cool with it here. So we look at origin, a couple of these smaller tabs here, our breakdown tabs. You can see what types of beer they look in, so like if you're looking at mead, cider, and perry. And so now we can look at the different types of apple, cider, meads, perry kind of stuff. And we can drill into these individually. So if we look at, like, say, a dry apple cider.
This is like a dozen apps in one.
Yeah, and it should be able to click on those. But
how many man hours do you think are in the development of this application?
Well, we did the 2 days with, I think there were 6 people on the team.
When you say
yes,
2 days, you mean coding through the night?
Yeah, so we didn't actually code through the night. There were 2 12-hour days with the 6 team members. And then we did probably with touch-up on, like, artwork and stuff, I would say there's probably another individual working for a few more days after that to really get it ready to be deployed to the store. So in large, not a tremendous effort, but very valuable and getting a lot of good experience out of that.
Yeah, I think you got a lot in that short period of time, which leads me to believe that you had done some planning up front. You knew at the beginning of those 2 days what you were going to build.
Correct. Yes, so that's correct. So what happens with normally these kind of settings, and whether we do them at Skyline or in the community when I'm doing them, it's usually advantageous to have 2 or 3 people sit down and actually give some scope. Because otherwise, when you sit down on that first morning, you're going to spend 3 to 4 hours just kind of twiddling your thumbs.
Sure.
So what we had done and what we normally do with our dev camps is we just have a voting where we say, what kind of apps are people interested in? And Beerology was suggested, and obviously everyone wanted to run with that as one of our apps. So a little bit of thought ahead, you know, several hours probably worth of some thinking and planning above beyond what you would consider in that normal weekend time frame. So some of these images don't come. That's just because that's not coming from the API, but most of them come through. This app in particular is written on the HTML CSS JavaScript side for Windows 8. Partially because
you built this in HTML.
Yeah, so it's a native, WinJS based on Windows 8 app, and this is we did three of our apps in the C# XAML and three of them on the JavaScript side because we wanted to get some exposure to different pros and cons of them. And this one in particular, going against a public API and pulling down all these images from over the web, it just made more sense for us for this one particularly to use the web-based technologies like JavaScript so that we can do that interaction a little bit easier. At least that was our theory, and it worked out well.
That's interesting. So having gone through that exercise of building some in HTML5, WinJS, some in XAML, C#, do you now have a preference? Or is it still based on the situation?
It is still based on the situation. Now, originally, in the 90s, I was doing obviously not C#, right? I was doing C++, JavaScript in the late 90s, that kind of stuff.
That's very cool. That's a couple of features, and we can put a link to this app. It's totally free, right?
Yeah, it's
so
totally
people
free.
Can install, they can check it out, they can play around with it. What I'd like to see right now is the code. Can you show us that?
I can, but you were mentioning that they can check out the app. So, if they happen to download it and they like it, we did implement like the search and share. So search, you can find your beers, share if they want to spread the love with us, they can click on that. And
I'm going to do that right now.
Integrates there. I don't have mail set up on this one, but if
you
did.
Let me see. So I'm going to go to my app right now. You can't see me, but I'm going to say share and send it off to my buddy.
Yep.
There we go.
All right.
With a screenshot. Look at that. Very cool.
Oh, yeah. All right. You're spreading the love. I like that. All right. So let's...
I wanted to tweet it. I was hoping I'd see a tweet in there.
So I think in the not yet released version that is there.
You're still working on this?
Yeah. Occasionally. It's not any kind of full-time thing.
Okay.
But now if I switch over and let's go into Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. We can see here that, as I mentioned, this was done on the HTML JavaScript side. And so we can see that, again, as I mentioned, the Windows 8, we're upgrading it to 8.1. So we've got the typical structure, with our CSS, images, JavaScript, and individual pages. And then, so if I expand out pages, we can see that there's beers, CSS, an HTML, and a JavaScript file. And what we're seeing here, this is our beers HTML. So when you come to this particular view, we'll see that we load in some of the Windows stuff. We then load in our JavaScript and some CSS from the application-wise so that we get access to our services that we need, web services. And then finally, we load in the specific views, CSS, and JavaScript. And so in this case, that beers.js is kind of the equivalent of having like the C# code behind to the XAML markup. What we can see here throughout this, by scrolling down, we can see that we're using some of the built-in options with the menu. We have a couple templates like for our header and information template, as well as implementing semantic zoom. And further going down, we can see that we have a grouped items page where we specify our main content and some of the CSS is in line there as well. And continuing on down, we have a flyout here, which allows for you to filter on a variety of ranges for alcohol content and OG min, IBU, max, min. So help you filter down what you're actually looking at. So as you can see here by looking at some of the code, there's a lot more features that we didn't get through the demo, but encourage you to download.
And I'm looking at this flyout here. It looks like you've just put a div on the page and you've written some JavaScript to handle the flyout yourself. Did you use any controls at all? Any third-party controls?
No, we didn't use a third-party control, but here, so for the most part, it looks like that. But by having this data-win-control
I didn't see that.
With the WinJS UI flyout, that takes care of a large amount of the work that we would need. in that particular case. And so when this HTML actually gets tied to the JavaScript and then rendered as a view, we're getting that capability. You know, like if we look down here at the bottom below the flyout section, we can see that we also have one that in a similar fashion for the app bar, and then specifying four app bar commands here, for filtering, add to personal pub, add to party pub, try it. Keep in mind that this particular view that we're looking at is on the list of beers. Those options apply for this particular view, and you can change that depending on the view that you're looking at.
Very cool.
And then if we look at the JavaScript file that ties up to the beers here, we can see that we do some stuff with wiring up and setting up our app view, as well as for the navigation. And then within our namespace that we're defining here, we've got a load function. And this is really about loading up from our data source. So here you can see create the data source and get that information out of there with any particular filters that may be specified, like the style and other options that we can specify as a user.
And then, my favorite line of JavaScript in there, which is that equals this.
Yeah. So, there's kind of a confusion. There's how the this keyword gets scoped. So a very typical pattern is to say var that equals this, where you effectively get a closure around that so that you get, in the right execution context, you get access to what the developer really would think is this.
Right.
Some weird words.
You get to preserve that context in a variable called that. You could have named that variable anything, but everybody names it that, and it just sounds funny. That equals this.
It does. And so we go along with getting out information and setting up that information within the app for displaying. We also have if they're searched by types of origin or category, depending on what's clicked there. We have a reload ability, which is really allowing for the filters to be applied. We have a couple event handlers for when you do some clicks, for either clicking on an item, adding to the personal pub or the party pub, right? So you can see that we're doing some typical type of querying off the DOM and casting it as a win control, so then we get access to do stuff on that. Now, another kind of misconception with the WinJS front like this is that WinJS is required to do these type of apps, and it's really not. WinJS is, for Windows 8, really added benefit, and it will play side by side very nicely with other third-party controls. So, with the WinJS, with jQuery or Knockout or Angular, you can go ahead and use those. WinJS just provides really some integration pieces that'll help you with contracts, device integration, specific operating system type features that you may want to take advantage of. And for the most part, what you're looking at here is largely just JavaScript. And so what I found is that, giving some presentations on this, that a lot of people, once they realize that, they're like, oh, okay, so I really can just sit down. I don't have to learn this whole other type of framework in order to try and take advantage of a lot of the great features here. If we keep going down a little bit here, we can see, so the namespace here, which helps us define kind of sectional areas within JavaScript, there's already some existing patterns that came from the JavaScript world, like the prototype pattern, and Microsoft, fully embraced that type of notion, and same with promises.
Now, what are promises?
So promises are, since we're talking about .NET apps here, and specifically then the WinRT type apps, promises, the best analogy I can provide is the async await pattern that Microsoft has provided with .NET 4.5 and before that with the task parallel library, in that when you execute something asynchronously and you get an await or a continue with option to execute code when that asynchronous operation completes. And so in the case of promises, that's the pattern used throughout the JavaScript community. to execute in that similar fashion. So if we make, you know, the Ajax call to go out to a web service, get some information, and we can specify a function in line as part of the promise. So in the case of the tasks in .NET, you have continue with. In the case of promises in JavaScript, you have a .then. And finally, so you can chain together a bunch of things like my Ajax call .then with something, and then .then, and .then, and finally with a .done. And so it allows you to chain those together, those asynchronous operations, and it really does make things quite a bit cleaner in code, as well as more straightforward of an understanding of process. You don't have to worry about manually trying to handle that async or forcing your code to be synchronous.
All right, thanks. Now, I wanted to ask you also, are you using any JavaScript frameworks in this application?
I don't believe that we are. From what I remember when we developed this, we didn't add anything in particular, partially because at the time it was only like a month or two out for, or actually it was a month or two before release, I think, that we started doing this app. And we
before
didn't want to
release of what?
Of Windows 8 general availability.
Ah, I see.
And so we didn't want to take on any extra complexity at that time. And because, like, so when Windows 8 was first released, the third-party frameworks, they needed to understand a little bit about what it meant to work in a Windows 8 world. And so starting with jQuery 2.0, they fully added support, and, you know, Knockouts added support, Angular's added support. Now, just because they put their badge on there that says we support Windows 8-style apps, doesn't mean that those are the only ones that will work. It just means that they've fully tested it in the scenario for Windows 8. I've taken some, you know, smaller third-party ones and just included the JavaScript library through NuGet, and it's just worked. So don't make any assumptions just because they say it's Windows 8 support or not. It's a good sign if they have that there, but it's not necessarily indicative of what the result will actually be.
I see.
But yes. For this particular case, we were really trying to just understand what the platform itself provided us and what we could and couldn't do with the native built-in features.
That's very cool. Hey, I was curious about the, you had said you had six people working on this simultaneously.
Yes.
How did that go? Yep. Were they all writing code?
Yes.
How did you keep your code in sync? Did you use some kind of ALM tools?
So what we did with this was actually the summer of 2012 was when, at the time, they called it TF Service, which is the TFS in Azure. And so that was still in beta, but we went ahead and said, okay, we need to know what this means for us, for our clients. So we actually hosted all of these projects for our development camp in what's now known as Visual Studio Online. We actually worked with a couple of the program managers from Microsoft to make sure, you know, when we had 40-some people, 40-some developers across those six teams working, that things would all work. And so they monitor it, and it was kind of a collaborative effort there. And we did not experience any hiccups even during the beta. And now actually today or tomorrow, I think, VSO, the Visual Studio Online for short, is actually being cut over to go live. You know, where the trial licensing is no longer there, so fully RTM'd. And, you know, since then, we've had such success with it that, you know, we've got several dozen clients that are using Visual Studio Online as their major ALM solution and source control solution.
Oh, very nice. I actually really like Visual Studio Online, except I don't like the name. I think the name is misleading. TFS Online would have been a better name for it.
Yeah, so... So I get that as well, and I think what's often overlooked in that is going back to 2005 when TFS was originally released, the full actual name, like if you go download it from MSDN, actually is Visual Studio Team Foundation Server. And so I think that's where kind of the umbrella lies and why they're calling it Visual Studio Online. And who knows, maybe they have more plans, but right now I agree for the most part in that you know, the Team Foundation online or something like that might have been a better name, just for clarity.
But the tool itself is very cool.
Not only for
source control, but for every part of your application lifecycle management.
Yeah, so when I say we've got clients using it, that means, you know, using the work items for bugs and tasks and, you know, planning out their sprints, as well as, you know, the testing capabilities, automated builds, and one of the newer features that we're really enjoying so far is the application insights, where, you know, that kind of is like taking it a few steps beyond a Google Analytics type thing, where Google Analytics is really giving you just kind of the consumer SEO type information from the browser.
It's a search engine optimization?
Yes. And where the application insights from Visual Studio Online really help out with understanding what's going on in your code all the way down to the SQL queries. Yeah, when we're talking about kind of profiling information with those SQL queries, it can become a challenge out on the cloud. So using something like the Application Insights or monitoring uptime, as well as seeing errors that end users get in their browser, you know, it really provides much more in-depth information. So
very cool. We should do a whole show on this. This would be
We're a little bit off topic from the original, but
no, I mean in the future, in the near future.
It's all things that help out us as developers deliver, you know, that continuous improvement type thing. So
Just to be clear, the topic is building this cool app.
Yeah.
And I think the ALM is a part of that. Application Lifecycle Management is a part
That's
of that.
True. That is very true.
What's any other parts of the code that you're particularly proud of you want to show off?
No, I think, you know, I don't want to, I just want to be clear in that there was a team. It wasn't just, you know, myself working on this. There are very dedicated other individuals that worked on this app. And
can you tell us their names?
Yeah, if I switch back here to my desktop and
probably bring up VS Online and find them in your team there.
We can go out to our credits tab. And we can see this shows, you know, all the people that worked throughout the weekend on the dev camp, which is their last name. So, for instance, there's me. I believe Samuel Lees, Matt Giuliani, Sue Lemery, Kenny Young, Jeremiah Billman led it up. I think Andrew Peterson worked on it. It was definitely a larger and coordinated effort, and I'd just like to give credit to all those people that worked on it.
Yeah. And this is a dev camp. I thought I knew what a dev camp was, but apparently I don't. Dev camp is what?
So for us, you know, it may mean different things, but for us it's really we get together on our own time over a weekend for a couple days, and it's kind of like a coordinated hackathon, where the hackathon really has no rules or stated direction. You know, you're just kind of getting together to build cool things, whatever you come up with. But with the dev camp, we actually have some goals and some predetermined teams, you know, for what we want to get out of it. So that's what it means for us. But it very well may mean other things to other people.
Okay, Greg, I don't want to let you go without talking about this conference that I know you put a lot of time into organizing. This is the one in August in Wisconsin.
That is correct. It's actually called That Conference. So if you go to thatconference.com, it's a full national level professional developer conference with over 1,000 devs. So we get about 130 sessions in with people from far away as Europe, Australia, South America for some attendees and some speakers. So it's this year, it will be August 11th through the 13th, and we host it in Wisconsin Dells, which is the world's largest collection of water parks. So as such, we look at it as our tagline as being summer camp for geeks, where, you know, the developer kind of IT person can go to the sessions, but you can also bring along your spouse and kids. And we have I believe this year will be 12 family track sessions to help kids learn how to develop, and you know there's a water park there and a lot of other attractions so that your family can kind of take part of your mini vacation while we geek out doing technical developer stuff during the day. You know, we even have like a big pig roast and rent out one of the water parks on one of the nights. It's a lot of fun. You know, we do it as a nonprofit, and we're all developers that volunteer our time and run it. So, you know, we keep the price low as well. A lot of the larger conferences go up into the multi-$1,000 range. Our price point for a 3-day conference is only $399. So if you're interested, thatconference.com, I can actually show you the website here. You know, if you're interested, you can always get in contact with me over the show notes or go to our website.
Tickets are on sale now?
Or tickets go on sale next week.
Next week, okay. It'll probably be a couple days before this gets out anyway, so.
Yeah.
Keep looking at thatconference.com. I was there the very first year, which was 2 years ago. I had a great time.
And, yeah, our sessions, we just finalized all the sessions, so all the speakers and sessions are listed out there. And tickets, I believe it's May 15th, go on sale.
Greg, thanks so much. This is some really good stuff.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And, you know, I encourage you guys to go check out Beerology again and you know, give it a whirl.
This has been another exciting episode of Dev Radio. Thanks for watching.